Monday to Friday, 2:30 to 4. It is The Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he hops on every week, Arif Hassan. He covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. You can find much of his work at those two outlets. Go to zonecoverage.com, click on the Vikings tab at the top of the page. Arif, as always, the time's appreciated. Obviously, the number one headline coming from the Lions game on Sunday is Minnesota losing Dalvin Cook to a torn ACL. It's interesting to me, like, how good was this guy? How good had he been, knowing that most now view the drop-off from him to Latavius Murray as a big-time drop-off? I think it says more about how good Dalvin was playing than it does about Latavius, but Murray was a Pro Bowler 2 years ago, certainly had a couple of good seasons in Oakland, yet most view this as a substantial letdown going from Dalvin Cook to Latavius.
Yeah, no, it is a pretty substantial drop-off, and I think you're right that it's more about how good Dalvin Cook is than it is about, you know, how apprehensive people really should be about Latavius Murray. He was playing like he was a top-five running back, and, you know, sure, over the course of the full season, you know, maybe that gets kind of evened out, and you know, he's not, you know, playing at that full level or whatever. And I think people understood that, and they were still pretty excited about, you know, how he can play and his ability to generate power, his ability to generate, you know, positive yards on plays that look like they're busted, and you know, his multiple playing styles and his home run capability. So yeah, no, it was you know, you really exciting, and it's very frustrating to see this happen.
I mean, yeah, and it's just sickening seeing Dalvin Cook, his rookie year, highly touted, already living up to expectations and then some, and on just, you know, one cut, one play, the rest of the season is wiped away. I was saying yesterday, I can't imagine going from what I perceived to be for him like cloud nine. Like, he was exceeding expectations here early on, starting to gain some of that national attention from the experts and the analysts, and so he goes from cloud nine to gone for the year in the snap of a finger. I can't imagine what that's like, can you?
Yeah, it must be just so, I guess, frustrating again. Like, there's no, and you know, you see a word like frustrating and it doesn't really convey, you know, the full gravity of what's happening. No, that must be just excruciating.
Are we at a point where, like, Arif, whenever I hear non-contact and knee injury, I'm just assuming the absolute worst, and it usually plays out as such, regardless of sport, although I think with non-contact knee injuries, we assume ACL, it happens, it seems like, more frequently in the National Football League or in football in general, and I'm at that point where when I see non-contact and leg knee injury, I'm just assuming it's the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, no. You hear non-contact, and your brain just goes places. It's really, it sucks. And I was listening to Sage Rosenfeld the other day, former backup quarterback for the Vikings, and he mentioned something like 70% of ACL injuries are non-contact. You know, a lot of people think about, you know, a helmet going to the knee, and it turns out, you know, most ACL injuries, in football or whatever, are non-contact. And so, yeah, I guess this kind of thing happens relatively frequently.
Arif Hassan, our guest this afternoon here on The Blitz, covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. What will they miss the most? What will be the hardest element of Dalvin Cook to replace? Is it the pass catching out of the backfield, the explosive plays, the vision? What will be hardest or near impossible for the replacement backs to try and mimic?
Yeah, I think it's, his creative ability. You know, there's a lot of running backs, you know, you drop a play and they're going to follow that play come what may, right? You know, whether or not there's a good lane there or not, they're just going to follow through with whatever that play design is. And Latavius Murray is a little bit like that, but Dalvin Cook, you know, he's got a combination of running styles that allow him to either, you know, sit and wait out, you know, what's going to happen on that running play. Maybe a backside cut's going to open up where he's going to diagnose right away, hey, going in this direction is just not going to work out. And he'll kind of loop around to the other side of the field and see if he can get, you know, a cheap 4 yards or something like that. So, you know, his ability to improvise, which, you know, is related to vision and decision-making and all those other qualities that you want in a running back, his ability to improvise in particular is something that's going to be near impossible to replicate.
It would appear that Latavius Murray is next in line. I think Mike Zimmer said as much yesterday, and he'll have a heavily expanded role. Are you worried at all since, aside from we mentioned the drop-off from Dalvin Cook to Latavius Murray, with Latavius in particular, he has made it clear himself his ankle isn't quite 100% after off-season surgery. How much does that concern you?
Yeah, that is concerning. It's not, you know, so extraordinarily concerning that, you know, I'm worried about re-injury or that his play will drop off significantly over what it would have been, because, you know, otherwise they probably wouldn't have, you know, rostered him for so many games. You know, a lot of players will play, you know, hurt. So it's an issue, but it's not one that makes me hit the panic button or anything like that.
Do you expect him, like, how do you think it shakes out now? Do you expect Latavius Murray to see or get as many touches as Dalvin Cook was getting, or will we see Jerick McKinnon more than likely on passing downs?
No, I think I don't think it'll be a passing down split so much because, you know, Latavius Murray is really good at pass protection and he's got pretty good hands. But I do think he's not going to get nearly as many touches as Dalvin Cook got. I mean, Cook was, you know, getting really up there with, when you start including, you know, his targets and all that. So, you know, we're going to see a healthy dose of Latavius Murray, but I think we're also going to see, you know, a really good mix of Jerick McKinnon, and that'll come on passing and running downs. So, I don't know that, you know, it'll be a one-for-one replacement. I think there's going to be sort of a committee replacement option, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Vikings, you know, tried to find another running back to kind of round out that roster.
Always enjoy his time with us on the program. He is Arif Hassan, covers the Vikings for Zone Coverage and the Daily Norseman. As for the game itself on Sunday, of course, the Vikings fell 14-7 to Detroit. I'll ask the generic question of what were your takeaways and what stood out to you?
To me, what stood out were just how good, you know, that defense was after you take a step back, right? You know, because, you know, there were a lot of missed tackles and everyone's kind of frustrated with everything that was happening. Amir Abdullah ran for 4.7 yards a carry. But you take a look and, you know, most of the runs, more than on most occasions, you know, were bottled up. And you had to adjust for, you know, what situations the defense, you know, were put in. I think only allowing, you know, 14 points, given, you know, the incredibly short field and the amount of turnovers that occurred, you know, that, you know, should be respected. And, you know, if people are frustrated about, you know, all those dropped interceptions, you know, they should be. You know, they helped turn the game. But, you know, you allow 14 points, you should be able to win the game. So I think that kind of stood out to me as something kind of worth praising, especially with just getting six sacks. I mean, that defensive line played outstandingly. As to, you know, the other stuff, it's not surprising. You know, Case Keenum played, you know, above, I think, the level people would have expected him to play had you told people before the season, you know, that this was going to be the situation. You know, most people would have been like, well, you know, he's going to play like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL because, you know, he's a backup. And I think he played, you know, a little bit above that. I think that he played pretty well, given the amount of pressure he was under. He made a couple of key mistakes, especially, you know, with protection. You know, he was pressured on like half of his dropbacks per Pro Football Focus. And you look at those plays, and it's not really the offensive line's fault. A lot of it's just his fault in terms of, you know, how he designed protections or how long he held onto the ball or spitting into coverage and stuff like that. So the offense, I think it played about as well as you could expect, and they just got a little unlucky in some situations with, you know, fumble luck. You know, the play calling got a little bit wonky with that wildcat. It kind of sucks because a lot of the things that kind of mattered for the game are really just those fluke things, whether or not you catch those interceptions, whether or not you recover those fumbles, a lot of bad calls by the refs in the game. I don't think it's indicative going forward of how the offense is going to perform even without Dalvin Cook.
I wanted to look at the Lions offense and their quarterback for one second. Is Matt Stafford to you, Arif, is he a quarterback that you think the Lions, I can't imagine they directly tell him this, but maybe indirectly kind of nudge him in the direction of don't lose us this game? Like, he's the quarterback that can be labeled as just go out there, do your thing, but don't lose us the game. I look at guys like Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, and I know the Chargers are 0-4, but I put Phillip Rivers in that quarterback group. Like, those are QBs that will go out, they'll try and win you games, and they have the trust of the coaching staff to do so. And I just get the sense that the last couple of years, maybe farther back, Matt Stafford strikes me as a guy that the Lions say, don't lose it instead of go out and win it.
You know, I think, well, first, I definitely agree with that characterization of Philip Rivers. Second, I think that that is largely true when you take a look at how the game plan is put into place. But in the final 2 minutes, you know, Matt Stafford has been remarkably capable of generating fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. I think over the last 4 years, he leads the league in fourth quarter comebacks. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, you can only generate a fourth quarter comeback if you were behind in the first place. But I think some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, they'll bottle him up for a while, but they'll kind of embrace the chaos when the chips are down. He led the league, I think, last year with 8, which is kind of stunning, and then 3 years ago with 5. So in some senses, I think that for most of the game, they do kind of bottle him up. They ask the receivers to do a little bit more after the catch. They ask them to throw a little bit short. They ask them not to take many chances. But in other instances, you know, he really will put the team on his back and try to, you know, get the game, you know, won by himself. So I think it's actually a little bit of both.
Where is your confidence meter at, your faith meter with the Vikings now sitting at 2-2, and they're going to have to try and move forward sort of life without Dalvin Cook for the rest of the season?
It's going to be tough. Someone, you know, tweeted at me that, hey, the Vikings are Super Bowl contenders with both Bradford and Cook, and with Bradford and without Cook, they're probably still playoff contenders. And I think that that's a fairly optimistic read. I get the argument, though, because it's a top five-ish defense, especially if they start generating more turnovers. And, you know, if Bradford plays close to, you don't have to play exactly like it, but close to how he played in the one game he's played this season, then it's a really good team because you've got probably a top 10 offense even without Dalvin Cook. I think that's a little bit too optimistic. You can't really rely on Bradford to play like he did in his career best game over like an 8-year career. But, you know, that's another interesting take on it because of how important quarterbacks are. Because the drop-off from Dalvin Cook to Latavius Murray isn't nearly as bad as, say, the drop-off from Dalvin Cook to the running game, offensive line included, from last year, you know, there's still going to be, you know, some functioning running game that's going to be able to get some, you know, some work done in short yardage situations or set up like second and third and manageable situations. So I think the Vikings may be in the wild card race. I'm just not optimistic about them being able to pull something out of that wild card race. Wouldn't be surprised to see an 8-8 team, 9-7 team, and that's contingent really on Sam Bradford playing kind of the rest of the games from here on out. So, you know, maybe that won't be the case.
Arif Hassan, our guest this afternoon here on The Blitz. So I'm going to ask you then the follow-up, the unfair, impossible to answer question. Do you think Sam Bradford plays on Monday night? You knew it was coming. You teed me up, man. You teed me up.
Well, I'll put myself out there. I don't think he will. And I think the reason for that is because Bone Bruce is evidently, you know, you take a look at what some of the former doctors and team doctors on Twitter and like at the San Diego Tribune write, and it typically takes about 6 weeks. You can be day-to-day forever with a bone bruise, but that doesn't mean you're ready to play. So probably not. But that's just me speculating based off of, like, opinions from people who have not evaluated the bone bruise question. So there you go.
Vikings will be potentially getting one weapon back. Michael Floyd can be taken off the suspended list. What do you expect him to contribute? What will his role be? And for this one game in particular, Monday night against Chicago, when we look at, I always like looking at snap counts. When we look at snap counts on Monday night after the game or Tuesday morning, do you think Floyd will have more in that game against Chicago than Laquon Treadwell?
I think so. And that's not to say Laquon Treadwell has been playing, you know, abysmal or anything like that. And he's kind of late in the progression. Maybe he's open, you know, a lot more often than his target count would indicate. But you take a look at the two passes that were targeted his way against Detroit, you know, you could easily say, hey, neither of those were his fault. You know, he was overthrown on one, he got held down on the other. And, you know, that could be true, but, you know, a player with his profile, which Michael Floyd fits, you know, is either going to adjust to the ball better on that first one or is going to be able to overcome probably pass interference to be able to generate more lift and time that jump better. You know, the point of those receivers is to be able to overcome, you know, probably unfair circumstances in order to come down with the ball. And so, you know, Michael Floyd, yeah, I think he's got a better capability of doing that. And so I think we will see him overtake Laquon Treadwell snaps because you can ask him to do, you know, some things that are maybe unfair of other receivers to do. And Laquan Treadwell may still be playing well, but, you know, Michael Floyd may be able to just eke out some of those situations that Treadwell can't.
So as we tease the next game, Monday Night Football in Chicago at Soldier Field against the Bears, what matchups are you looking forward to, assuming Mitchell Trubisky kind of sneaks away with some of those headlines, at least heading into the game? Actually, let's start with that. What before we get to key matchups, what'd you make of the timing with Chicago announcing Mitchell Trubisky as the starter? Because I thought they would wait maybe a couple more weeks. I understand you want to show off the new toy, and you've got this national stage at home Monday Night Football, but I find it odd. I think they might, I don't know if the phrase is, they're biting off more than they can chew trying to show off this fancy new toy, the number two overall pick, but they're putting him on this national stage against one of the better defenses in the National Football League. As I sort of glanced at their schedule, Reef, I thought it would make more sense. I believe they have the Vikings, then the Ravens, and then they're back at home against Carolina. I sort of circled that game against the Panthers and thought that would make the most sense. I think there could be some added pressure in this just one game against the Vikings for Trubisky.
Yeah, no, I think so, and I think, you know, this is a situation where they definitely felt forced, which is never, you know, good. They benched the guy that they really wanted to go with because he was just playing so poorly. I mean, they're 1-3, that they feel forced to play somebody that they had declared, you know, was not ready. So it's probably not an ideal, I mean, it's definitely not an ideal situation for them, and I'm sure they're kind of apprehensive. On the other hand, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, they beat the Steelers. They actually were pretty close to that Falcons victory, but it's not as if Mike Glennon was playing well. So I can kind of see, you know, hey, you know, if he's not going to help us win games, let's go to the guy that might help us win games. But on the other hand, they definitely feel like their hand is forced. And so it feels as if Mitch Trubisky won the job so much as, you know, the job was lost by Mike Glennon, and I think kind of the distinction between those two can be really important. And then debuting, you know, your rookie quarterback against a really solid defense, that probably sucks. I don't think that they were planning for that.
All right, now time. Key matchups. What are you looking for matchup-wise, and what makes the difference in that contest on Monday night?
Sure. Well, I think the right tackle right now, Bobby Massey, has been playing. He's never been a particularly great tackle, but I think he's playing maybe the worst football of his career. And he gets to go up against Danielle Hunter, who's having a pretty decent season, especially against the run. And the fact that he just added his two sacks, you know, in the previous game, you know, maybe points out that, you know, he's kind of redeveloping that pass rush capability that he had last year. That, I think, is probably going to end up being important. You know, Cody Whitehair is kind of struggling a little bit. I'd like to see Linval Joseph blow him up a lot. You know, those are going to be positive matchups for the Vikings. On the other hand, you know, I'm a little bit worried about, you know, what's going to happen. You know, is Eric Kendricks going to continue to miss so many tackles? He missed a bunch of tackles in that game. And, you know, typically he doesn't. But, you know, if it continues, Tariq Cohen is really, really good at forcing missed tackles. So that's going to be a really important matchup, you know, which Eric Kendricks shows up. And then, you know, on the other side of the ball, you know, the Minnesota Vikings offensive line is going to have to deal with Leonard Floyd, who had a pretty decent year last year, is kind of struggling a little bit this year. But, you know, that's going to be important, too. Those safeties, you know, Adrian Amos and I'm forgetting the name of the other one, Eddie Jackson, who they just drafted, was a great draft pick. You know, those safeties may be able to limit the deep passes that Keenum loves so much. I really like Dixon Thielen a lot, and I think that the cornerbacks that they're up against, Marcus Cooper and Kyle Fuller, are not particularly talented. They'll be able to do some stuff, especially short and in the middle, but those safeties, you know, are probably going to be pretty good at shutting down the deep ball, so I'm kind of curious to see, you know, how the Vikings approach that. And then, obviously, you know, whatever happens with whatever running back that they put out there, you know, whether or not they have the ability to force some missed tackles, on that injured linebacker core, that's going to matter a lot too.
We'll finish with our off notes. Got three of them to get to today and lob your direction, Arif. We're at the 1/4 point of the season, four games in. More unpredictable this year, that the Bills are leading the AFC East at 3-1 or the Rams are leading the NFC West at 3-1?
Man, that's tough. I was going to say Rams, but, I mean, it's the AFC East, it's Patriots territory. Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to say the Bills, even though I was very confident that they were a much better team than a lot of people were. But, you know, it's Patriots territory. So it's very surprising to see someone not in the New England Patriots leading the AFC East. So to me, it's more surprising that it's not the Patriots. But I agree, the Los Angeles Rams doing very well is stunning.
Speaking of those Patriots, more unpredictable that through 4 weeks, the Jets and Jaguars have the same record as New England, or that the Giants and Chargers are a combined 0-8?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow, that's a really good one. I'm going to go with that first one. Was it the Jets and Chargers?
Jets and Jaguars have the same record as the Patriots through 4 weeks.
Great. Oh, that's nuts. and I really thought the Jaguars were going to beat the Jets, too. I think that I'm going to pick that one. what is going on with football? That's surprising. Like, I can see, you know, what the path is for the Chargers and the Giants to drop those games. They're always very volatile teams. Like you said, you know, Phillip Rivers is a really quality quarterback. But, you know, the Giants have enormous offensive line problems. The Chargers have, like, these persistent injuries. I can see that. I understand sort of what the path to that is. But the Jaguars and Jets, that's the same as the Patriots when you put it like that. That's I could not have crafted that.
Last one for you. More irritating to you, the year Carson Wentz and the Eagles are having so far that the Packers and Lions are both 3-1.
Oh, wow. So here's the thing about Carson Wentz playing well. It's more that the Eagles are playing well and Carson Wentz is being put into some really, really positive situations. You know, he had, I think there were 37 plays in a row where the Eagles were able to play inside their opponent's 20. That's really good news if you're a young quarterback who's, you know, maybe all right, possibly bad. I really like a lot of players in that Eagles team. You know, Chris Long, Malcolm Jenkins, I like them a lot. Fletcher Cox is amazing. So I'm going to go with the other one, the Bears and the Lions.
No, Packers, Lions are both 3-1. Is that more irritating to you?
Yeah, Packers, Lions, sorry. that's more irritating.
There you have it. Find his work at zonecoverage.com. His podcast and other work can be found through the Daily Norseman. Arif, as always, we appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to wrap things up next with the Jim Mora playoff segment right here on the Blitz.